All right, episode kill pop 5691. Kill pop culture. All right, kill pop culture episode 55. Why does this five like that?
Five.
Five.
There's a hive of fives. Okay. Give me a high five, okay?
Okay.
Inside joke.
Yeah, we'll explain that one day. I always say, well, there's a lot of times I say, like, we got to do a quick intro because we've got a lot of show. And then we wind up not doing a quick intro, but we literally have to do a quick intro on this one because we've got, we'll probably go over. And again, usually when I say we're going to go over, we don't, but who knows at this point. As so, I sit here right now, I have no idea.
So, hey, this is Jerm. This is Mark.
Love you, bye. No, just kidding.
This is your intro.
Intro, outro. Do it now. Do it live. Go. No, the only thing I wanted to announce, which you'll hear about everything in the interviews we're fixing to do that's coming up with That So Sick Fest and everything with the Shannon Byers has going on. But I did want to announce that we are fixing to do a giveaway for Dr. Alan Brown's new book called Ghosts of the Golden Triangle.
Good book.
Yeah, you've almost finished it, haven't you?
Almost.
I've read a lot of it.
I could have been done with it by now, but I had some life issues going on that I had to take care of first. So
life choices?
Yeah.
I'm probably 41% done with it. Maybe a strong 39. Where are you on the percentile?
768. I'm ahead of you. That's weird.
One more page, you could have got that 69.
I'll go home and read it. I'll go home and read it tonight.
It's too late. It's too late.
I'll read it
the
tonight.
The moment has passed.
It'll be on next
But we
podcast.
Have a signed copy of the book that we want to give to you.
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 Yo.
Too far.
No, too
you
far.
Made, no, you made it weird.
No, too far would have been to go do that voice that you do where you malt me sometimes.
And the way we're going to do the drawing.
You're not even going to do it now because you would know that would go too far.
The way we're going to do the drawing is simple, all right? If you want to be legible, that means
eligible.
Available for us to read, legible, you need to send us an email, killpopculture69@gmail.com. Again, that's killpopculture69@gmail.com. And in the subject line of that email, you just have to put the word book. Is that simple enough?
But it's got to be in Aramaic.
No, it just has to say book.
No, I mean it's got to be in like the
in the body the font, in the body font. Of the email. You can put anything you want.
No, you got to do it in Bleeding Cowboy.
No, God, no.
Bleeding Cowboy font.
Every flyer from every butt rock band in the world has Bleeding Cowboy as the
KOJ font. Did one back in the day
because we're a butt rock band. What are you talking about?
No.
I'll rock them butts.
No.
Them Boston butts.
No.
Anyway, I digress.
You do.
In the subject line, put the word book. In the body, put whatever you want. Tell us happy Halloween. Tell us a ghost story. Tell us we're cool. Hey, flattery will get you anywhere. I'm not going to say that it will help you win the book, but it will definitely make us feel good about ourselves, and we like doing that.
If you tell us we're cool, it might help you a little more.
So we're going to take all these emails. We're going to print out every email, and we're going to fold them up like a little love letter from eighth grade. We're going to put them in our drawing bucket, and we're going to Facebook Live us shaking the bucket and drawing the name out, the email. So go do that right to now.
Are you looking to reach a wider audience? Are you looking to get your name out there? Are you looking to go to the next level with advertisement? Well, think no more. Advertise with us at Kill Pop Culture.
Just tell us a little bit about your business and leave the rest to us. We'll build you a state-of-the-art commercial to be played every episode.
We're only going to take on about one or two more sponsors, so be sure to grab these slots up before they're gone.
We have plans to fit any budget, and we can build a commercial for any type of business.
Email killpopculture69@gmail.com today.
Cool. All right. On the phone, I have Mr. Stephen Yates. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How about yourself?
I'm just getting ready for this big show coming up, man. That's So Sick Fest.
Yeah, man. It's going to be a pretty nice little thing that we've got going on.
Well, let me ask you this. Is this the first time you've done a festival? I know you've done tons of shows before, but you ever done anything this magnitude, anything this big before?
I've helped out a little bit on January Jam in the past, but as far as Tupelo-wise goes, this is the biggest thing I've probably ever done.
You never done a two-day festival before?
No, I'm really, really stoked about it, too.
Yeah, I can speak a little bit from experience doing the Railroad Festival. There's a lot of ups and downs. What's one thing you look forward to the most, like when you do a show or a festival out there, just watching everything kind of come together?
Pretty much just watching everyone, you know, really enjoy themselves, watching all the musicians and the fans actually be a united front, and, you know, there's no drama or anything like that, and just the satisfaction of, at the end of the day, you know, we did something good.
Yeah, no, speaking of that, like, you're so involved with the music scene that, like, all these people and these bands and stuff, we're all, like buds. It'll be like a big frat party. I mean, we all know each other, and you know everybody in all these bands, like, really well.
Oh, yeah. It should be a nice little party.
Man, yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about, let's go back in the past a little. What got you interested and involved in wanting to start booking shows and being a promoter?
Well, I guess it really all started thanks to a guy named Max Victory.
Oh, yeah, I know Max.
I started going to shows at Good Time Charlie's, and one thing led to another, and I kind of got hooked in it because when I moved up to Mississippi, I was kind of like an awkward kid and everything, didn't really talk to anybody, and then started going to shows, started seeing what the environment was like, and I really enjoyed it, and just kind of took off from there. Was at every single show after that, and now I'm doing my own little thing.
Was there any particular show or band or experience that solidified your desire to be a promoter? Or you were like, yeah, this is definitely something I want to do?
Probably whenever we did the Icy Stars tour in Tupelo, I saw everybody that came in there and how much fun it was, and just to see, you know, all my friends and all the bands and everything that I knew for a while, you know, just actually enjoying themselves, and just that environment alone, it hooked me.
Right on. Where did you come up with how'd you come up with the name That's So Sick Fest?
Well, actually, it's kind of a very simple way. We were on our way back from this show in St. Louis called Floor Fest, and I was still buzzed and amped up from the show and everything, and on our way back in the car, me and another promoter that I work with, we got to talking, and we started thinking, you know, what would be an actual, like, a sick festival to do and everything for Tupelo to actually have everybody come out and stuff, and I just, you know, automatically just assumed I'd just call it Best of the Sick Fest just because I knew it would hook, and I knew it would be, like, a really, really fun time, and just to hear everybody say, you know, naturally, That's So Sick Fest, it's, you know, it's the sickest thing you could do on Halloween.
Damn right. I noticed, there's going to be two stages, one outside and one inside, and bands are going to be going back and forth. How many bands total are on this thing, days combined?
Between both days, we're looking at about 20 bands. It'll be 10 bands a day, 5 bands per stage, and we're actually using the outside stage is going to be the stage that's used for the rock stage at the Amy Royal Festival every year.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I have definitely a working knowledge of that thing.
We know how to put that thing together, don't we?
Yeah, and unfortunately tear it apart after everybody's left and there's only two of us to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yep. Well, awesome. Of course, it's going to be Halloween. Is everybody doing costumes? Is there going to be a costume contest or what?
Right now I'm looking at if you decide to dress up in a costume, the tickets themselves, actually, they're $10 per day or $15 for the weekend. And if you dress up in a costume, you actually get $2 off your ticket. So whether that be a day ticket or a weekend pass, you know, you're only going to be paying like $8 to $13 for your ticket itself. And then we're kind of throwing around ideas at the moment whether we want to do some costume contests and possibly give away some cash and all that fun stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, every year when there's a Halloween show, there's been some really killer costumes show up. I mean, some of them, it's everything from, you know, just somebody buys a mask at Walmart all the way up to, like, movie quality, like, costumes that come out. There's definitely a lot of people in the area that's really talented with that kind of thing.
And from what I've understood, I've actually not seen, you know, really any other thing going on in Tupelo for that weekend other than some haunted houses. So, I mean, if everybody wants, you know, to actually enjoy a party and see all their favorite bands, Mr. Tony's would be where it's going to be at.
Man, yeah, and you really got the jump on the whole deal because you started planning this thing, like early on.
We went to Floorfest in, I think, March, and by early April, we were already starting to book bands, get a flyer made, find the venue and everything.
So, tell us a little bit about some of the bands. You know, this is a pretty good lineup for 2 days worth of stuff. Tell us a little bit about the bands that you have coming up for this festival.
Well, we wanted to have a kind of like a variety, and I wanted to give everybody that I knew in the region as well, other than just local bands, you know, a shot to actually come and play in one spot they may have never even been before to gain new fans and everything. And right now we've got bands coming in from Alabama, the surrounding Mississippi scene, St. Louis, Florida, some from Memphis, and each day is going to be packed full with some heavy metal. We've got deathcore, hard rock, pop punk, pretty much anything you could think of. It's going to be on that festival.
Awesome. So you got quite a variety going on.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like everybody's definitely going to be getting their money's worth. Again, this is a First Order Productions event. That's your company, First Order Productions, right?
Yes, sir. We're currently based between Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee. It's six different promoters all in one little company together. That way, whenever we have a certain show come to the area, or possibly even a tour that somebody might be booking, whether it be a mini tour or whatever, we could have all of that tour hit each one of our cities and give all the fans in every area a possible chance to see that band or those bands, whatever it be, on that tour. If they can't make it to one date, they can make it to another.
That is awesome, dude. I mean, networking is the way to go nowadays. You definitely have to have that network connection.
That's
really cool that y'all got that going on. How did First Order kind of, I mean, you told me how you got involved, but how did you get involved with First Order Productions? How did that come about?
Well, it started out, I was doing my own thing called Renegade Promotions, and me and a buddy of mine named Kyle Prescott, we started doing shows together in Alabama, and we had a fellow promoter in Georgia named Joe Ramsey hit us up, and he wanted to start doing kind of like something bigger than what he'd been doing and wanted to actually have something on par with like Music City booking and everything in Nashville. And we're all kind of nerds and big Star Wars fans and everything. So we got to thinking, you know, what could be something cool that we could all be united under that everybody would know, but could also possibly expand itself into something huge. And so Joe actually came up with calling it First Order Productions, and we had our buddy Rodney from Nashville design our logo for us and everything, and just kind of went off from there.
I noticed you guys had a setup where you can pre-order tickets for this online, can't you?
Yeah, you can go to bandcamp.com and search up That's So Sick Fest, and it should lead you straight to the link, or you can go to the event page itself and go to the details tab. And they'll be right there at the very top of the details tab, or show a link that you actually click on to buy advanced tickets.
Awesome. And I know you said this already, but remind me again, what are the prices?
For each day, it'll be $10. For a weekend pass, it's $15. But if you happen to come and dress in a costume, you get $2 off your ticket.
$15 for 20 bands? That's a steal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially considering, you know, some of these bands, they're coming from a pretty long ways away, and you know, they don't expect anything else other than, you know, just to see some brand new faces and have a good time with some really cool people.
Yeah, a lot of these, all these bands that are on this lineup, I would expect to pay at least $10 to see them by themselves, much less with 19 other bands. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, bands like Chalice Eye, for instance, they don't really come around the area often, but I know that they have a pretty decent following in Tupelo, as well as Roses in Red and Seeking Seven and Killjay and actually several other bands. And then we've got bands like This Is Me Breathing and Give Off Skyline. They're from Alabama and St. Louis that, you know, people may have never heard of, but they've toured the area numerous times. And the fact that they actually get to come down to Tupelo now, hopefully, you know, it'll be, you know, a new experience for them as well as everybody else.
You did say if you come in a costume, that's $2 off a ticket, right?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to reiterate on that, you know, promote that out there a little bit more, too. So feel free to come. I mean, it's right here before Halloween. It's a Halloween show.
Yeah, Halloween falls like on a Monday this year, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is the Friday and Saturday before Halloween.
Yes, pretty much. I mean, unless you plan on being out on Monday night by yourself and taking your kid trick-or-treating, this will be your one-stop shop to actually come and hang out, have a good time. I mean, it's an all-ages event. So feel free to bring the whole family.
I'm glad you brought that up because we do a Halloween show of some sort every year. And that's always a conflict with, because there's a lot of people that I know that come see us. They're a little bit older and they have kids. They want to take trick-or-treating. And if the show falls on Halloween night, then they have to, if they're planning on coming, they have to rush home and, you know, and get to the show, and they get there late, and they may miss a band or two or three. And it's really cool that it worked out with the calendar this way, because the weekend before Halloween, you've got this huge show, and then Monday you can go do the family thing.
Exactly. Pretty much, you know, just rock your socks off all weekend, and then Monday, after your kids get home from school, go get you some candy, and then have you enough little night.
You got time to sober up and get over the hangover before right. You have to take your kids out.
You know, and the thing about it is, with the costumes, I want to say this. I want to see so many costumes up there that I can look at these costumes and literally say, that's so sick. That costume is so sick.
I see what you did there.
Right.
You know, for the longest time, I've wanted the whole band to go up on stage as the Ghostbusters.
I'm not doing that.
Well, the thing is... Until I lose some weight, I would have to be Ray.
Or the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Or the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
What happened to your Bat Signal costume?
Yeah. See, we just did Delta Fan Fest a couple of weeks ago, and Kelly came up with this. Well, it was a funny story, but long story short, I think one Halloween I'm going to come dressed as the Bat Signal. It'd be pretty easy. It'd be ironic. It'd be funny. You know, it'd be me.
So what else as far as First Order Productions do you have lined up in the works going on right now? Or is this something you're going to do and then going to take a break for a little while? Or do you have some more stuff lined up in the near future?
Well, right now we're just looking kind of like as this festival to be kind of like our send-off for now, for 2016, because we've been working shows since since January, Jim, in the early part of this year. But I'm going to take probably about a month or two off and then start planning ahead for early 2017 and seeing what else could pop up for like the early part of next year and possibly hopefully get some nice tours coming through here.
Right. Sounds like a plan then.
Well, I know that there's an event page out there. I know that there's an actual Facebook page just for this event, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, First Order has its own social media. So just run down real quick all the social media links where people can find out more about this and all that good stuff.
Well, you can go on Facebook and go to your search browser and type in That's So Sick Fest, and it should send you directly to the page itself. And if you scroll down the page just a little bit to your event tab, you'll actually find the event for the actual show and everything and where you can go buy tickets and see all the bands and the details of what to expect and everything like that. And if you have any other questions, just email me at steven@firstorder@gmail.com, and I'm usually responding within like an hour or two of everyone.
Awesome. And I think there's another podcast that's promoting this as well. Is it the Stashy Review? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's another guy from, I believe he's from, I forget the city, but he's somewhere in Arkansas. We'll be actually doing an interview for that here soon, and he'll be down during the festival as well.
Awesome. Everybody definitely should check that out because they're playing music from the bands, and we're going to be playing some music here too. So definitely do some cross-promoting and check out both podcasts. And
Everybody come out.
Everybody come out.
Come out and support. And I think I saw Steven posted something the other day. If everybody brought two friends with them, we could sell out this place.
I think this is going to sell out. This should be. There's no reason this shouldn't be record attendance for Mr. Tony's. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, just food for thought here for myself. If every person could at least just bring one or two people with them, especially someone that's never even been to a show before, feel free to invite them, bring them along, let them be. Have this as their first time experience with all these bands and everyone together. And, I mean, just you, every single person that's going to be coming, inviting one or two people, I mean, it could literally have a potential to sell out the first ever, the festival that we've done.
Awesome, awesome. Now, I did see that you said, I think it was on Facebook the other day, you announced that we were going to have two hosts for this show this year, too. You want to talk a little bit about that for a second?
Oh, yeah. We're actually going to have, I don't know... if anybody out there would know who Illyria or Dark Epiphany is.
Yeah.
But John Horn, the lead vocalist of Illyria, and Sammy Barnes, the lead vocalist of Dark Epiphany, they'll actually be coming down to MC the night on both stages and encourage the crowd, to get them pumped up and introduce the bands, and they'll probably be doing a few giveaways and everything themselves.
I'm glad John's going to be there because he owes me a beer. But no, yeah, we go way back with Illyria. We used to do shows with them when they were Vision, way back in the day. Well, man, we appreciate you taking time out to talk to us for a little bit. Everybody needs to go out and check out everything about the show. This is the place to be. Are they making T-shirts for this?
Yes, actually. If you would like to buy a shirt, I believe it's $12 for a small and a medium, and I think $15 for a large and extra large. But Michelle Knickerbocker is making T-shirts and everything for it. And if you would like to place an order in advance, feel free to hit her up on Facebook.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, make a fat boy size for me. For real, man, thanks for calling in and hanging out with us for a minute.
No doubt, man. Thank you, guys.
Definitely check out the event page for That So Sick Fest. This is not no particular order, but this is just a rundown of the bands that'll be there. Shallow Side, Roses on Red, Rachel Lauren, This Is Me Breathing, Shutdown Tactic, Runner Up Chuck, Seeking Seven, One Last Chance, Waves, Destination Up, Goodbye Skyline, Throne of Eden, Dream at Midnight, Dark Epiphany, Altruria, Defy the Architect, You the Few, Killjay, Invictus, and Strikes Back. And here's the song House of Fate by Throne of Eden. They'll be playing Friday night at That So Sick Fest.
Full of filthy rotting sand. This is my weeping house.
I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our good friends and sponsors of this show, Shadow Stalkers Paranormal, from Amory, Mississippi.
This isn't your average paranormal thing.
Shadow Stalkers is a nonprofit group that hosts fundraisers for families in need, and they also host fundraisers for historical sites.
Their fundraisers and paranormal investigations are open to the public, and they encourage everyone not to just watch, but to join in.
Look them up on Facebook and feel free to shoot them a message if you have any questions.
They are here to assist you with any paranormal needs you may have.
That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out. That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out. All right, we got Shannon Byers on the phone from Timeless Paranormal. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Where are you calling us from, Atlanta?
I'm right outside Atlanta. I'm in what they consider the metro area.
We're not too far away from you. What's the weather like in Atlanta this time of year?
Well, we've actually got a cold front coming through starting tomorrow. So whereas we had 92 all weekend, we're going to be highs of like 77 from Wednesday through the weekend.
Right.
Fall's going to be here for a few days.
If you want to share some of that cold front with us in North Mississippi, you go right ahead and we'll take it.
Well, I'm actually not going to be here, so you can have it.
Right, right. I need to introduce the rest of my crew here. We got Anthony, Mr. Anthony Count. Say hello.
Hello, how you doing?
Anthony.
And, of course, you've talked to Germ.
Hey, yes, how are you?
You were just at Dragon Con recently, right?
Correct. Yes, I was.
How'd that go?
It was good. It was a little different this year. This was our second year, actually, being invited guests. And they had some what's a good way to put it, personnel changes in the people that handled the paranormal end of things. But it turned out better than it looked like it was going to. So I'm pretty pleased with how it went.
Can you give us a little bit of a background? I know you are a paranormal genealogist, and I've got to say, I agree 100% with what you do with the genealogy and getting the actual facts. I mean, a true paranormal investigator, I'm one myself, so I know exactly where you're coming from on that, because you don't want to go into a place without doing some sort of research. And I mean, the best kind of research is getting the facts behind it.
Well, and that's my feeling on it. Now, you know, I don't want to make everybody mad at me, because I know there are people who swear by going in cold. And, you know, they'll never change the way they do things because they, for some reason, they think that going in cold and then doing the research adds more validity to a piece of evidence they might get during the investigation.
In a whole.
But in my opinion, you know, I've been a genealogist since I was 13, and I'm 48 now. So I've been doing this for a very long time.
Right.
And, you know, to me, if you know the history of the town, if you know the history of the location, if you know the history of the people, if you know some of the potential people's names, you know, they're going to be much more likely to interact with you if you have taken the time to get to know them before you get there. I mean, I'm a Southern girl, so I'm all about, you know, polite and respect and you know, when I talk to people. So, you know, if I showed up in at your house and, you know, I had things that I could talk about with you that you resonated with, you're going to be much more inclined to talk to me than if I just come in and start shooting questions out of the dark.
Right, exactly. Me and Anthony have both listened to your Geeks and Ghosts appearance. Both a big fan of it. And you did mention the reason that you started the genealogy thing had to do with Cold Mountain, you know, I mean, basically. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when I was 13, we had one of those class projects in school.
Right.
And it was, you know, find an interesting family story and write about it for an English class.
Right.
And so in my family, this story had always been passed down about, you know, a great uncle who's actually, he's a fourth great uncle, but you know how we Southern people are. It's a great uncle. You know,
oh, yeah, all the exactly. Other ones. Twice removed and then brought back again, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, right? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know all about it.
And, you know, the basic story was we had this great uncle who had, you know, decided he'd had enough of the war and he left, and he walked home from Virginia and ended up getting shot by the home guard on top of the mountain in the town where he lived. You know, he was like right at home's door and he gets shot by his own home guard because he's a deserter.
Right.
Well, but, you know, that was a fascinating story back in 1982, I think. And I had an aunt, you know, my family's all Southern Baptist, but I had one aunt who had been converted by what the town called the Man in Black. See, I was born in Cowpens, South Carolina, so this is kind of where this was taking place when I was doing the research. And the Man in Black had come through town and converted my aunt to be a Mormon, and she'd gotten all into genealogy stuff. And when I was interviewing her for my paper, you know, she lit the fire under me, set the bug going, whatever phrase you want to use. And from that time on, genealogy was my thing. It's like being a detective. And, you know, you get a little kernel of something, and you've got to find out what's going on. Well, in the 35 years since then, you know, and it's taken me almost all of those 35 years to get the real story of what happened. Oh, and then back in the 90s, my cousin wrote a book, Cold Mountain, which they turned into the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a fictionalized set of events based on real people.
Right. I mean, they Hollywooded it up, you know.
Yeah. You know, they got Jude Law to play my uncle. That was pretty cool. Oh, unfortunately, they chose Nicole Kidman to play his love interest. Yeah, you know, that's not my kind of thing, but, you know, Nicole Kidman's character, here's a spoiler, did not exist in real life.
Right.
So it was okay that they picked her. So that's, you know, the thing I've got on my paranormal genealogist website tells you, you know, what this is what the movie says and this is what really happened. And since you've looked at it, I'm sure you're probably of the opinion that the real story was a heck of a lot more interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's... Anthony, too, we're both big history buffs. And, mm-hmm. you know, we like going to the historical places around here. And it's you go out and they've got the historical landmark spots where they, you know, talk about, well, this place, so-and-so happened, you know, in 1812 or something like that. But after that, you kind of want to know more. I mean, you want to do some research on it and find out as much as you possibly can on a place.
So it's like y'all in that jail that y'all were talking about
right.
on your other show that I listened to.
Right, exactly. And that's still in the works, but going into it, we want to have every kind of historical detail that we can about it and, you know, do the research on it. So, you know, like I said a while ago, we agree 100% with what you do. And some people do, some people don't. But
and that's okay. I mean, everybody's got their own way of doing it. But I've got a really good example of one reason why you should do it if you want to hear it.
Right, exactly.
If you don't. There's a location here. Right out, it's on the south side of Atlanta. It's called the Holiday Dorsey Fife House,
mm-hmm.
and it was owned by Doc Holliday's family.
Wow!
It wasn't Doc Holliday's mother and father; it was his uncle that owned the house,
right?
And it's been turned into this great big museum. Half of it's Civil War stuff. Half of it's Gone with the Wind stuff. It sits next door to a bar that I don't think ever closes.
Right, I got you.
And when I was doing the research on that one, you know, I was pretty proud with some of the stuff I found. And I took it down there, and the docents kind of got aggravated with me because I found stuff that proved that their little plaques on there that they had on their walls with their histories was not correct.
Right. I mean, sometimes people don't like the truth, especially if they're doing it as a means of trying to bring in their business, I guess you'd say.
Well, but the thing was, it's like one really cool thing I found was that the house was actually older than they thought it was.
Right.
You know, and I proved it.
And, you know, and that's the thing about it to me is...
I'm sorry.
That's the thing about it to me is, like, the truth behind some of the stuff usually is more interesting than what happened. It may not be to a thrill seeker so much as it is somebody who's interested in the history and the background behind a place. I mean, if you want to go get scared, go to one of these dime a dozen haunted houses, you know?
Well, exactly. That's the difference between a ghost hunter and a paranormal investigator.
Exactly.
I think this is Anthony, by the way. I think it's kind of goes along with living in the South. You know, everybody's fish gets bigger over the years. And when you got a 100-year-old ghost story, that's a pretty big fish, and nobody likes being told their fish is not as big as they say it is.
Yes, but what if you can present them a fish they haven't ever seen before? It's like this house, you know, I found a really old book that's not in publication anymore. It was a family history book that was written way back when. And in this book, it talked about, you know, the ghost that people think haunts this house, his name is Manny, right? Well, in this history book, I found a story where they talked about how Manny had been made the flag bearer for the unit that had been mustered up in his town, and the flag for the company was actually made in that house. Well, when he marched off to war with his buddies in town, you know, it's written in the book, and this is verbatim, he marched out of town with the flag on, you know, in one hand and his fighting cock in the other. He took his rooster with him so they could cockfight when they had downtime.
Oh, okay.
Now, what kind of EVP questions do you think that inspires?
Exactly. Exactly.
On your research and stuff, when you find stuff that people, you know, find falsehoods in people's stories, do you find it more being, you know, embellishments of people just kind of exaggerating a story, or just outright lies for the most part? What do you usually find?
It honestly depends on the location. You know, it depends on what you're looking at, because, you know, when I came up with the name paranormal genealogist, it was basically to start debunking the history that you're getting on the TV shows of all the big locations like Bobby Mackey's, Waverly Hills, Old Charleston Jail, because I knew the history they were giving on these shows was crap. I mean, there might have been a kernel of truth in them, But again, it goes back to you cannot do, you know, an effective investigation if you're going into a place asking questions on bogus history.
Right. Well, which, you know, going back to what we said a while ago, the difference between a ghost hunter and a paranormal investigator, with my paranormal team, what I try to do is I go in and I try to debunk everything I possibly can. And at the end of the night, if I've debunked it, okay, no problem. But, you know, sometimes there's things that we really just don't have the answer for, where it's like, okay, yeah, this place very well is, you know, has got paranormal activity. Yeah, there's paranormal activity. I don't like using the word haunted because of the way that Hollywood has overdone that title. But if I go to somebody's house and do a, like a private investigation kind of thing, you're trying to go in there and help give those people peace of mind and give them some kind of answer.
Because you've got people who don't want ghosts in their house.
Exactly.
I mean, you've got the ones who think it's cool to have a ghost hunter come because they can say that the ghost hunters came. But, you know, you've got people that are scared.
Yeah.
You know,
legitimately
that really
scared.
Need help. And
right.
If you can tell them that, you know, that weird banging sound that's waking them up at 3 o'clock in the morning is water hammer from the ice maker kicking on.
Right.
You know, as opposed to a demon trying to tear down their walls, they're going to feel a lot better.
Yeah, exactly. And the stuff that you've done, what do you consider to be probably one of the biggest lures that you have proven to be false?
That's kind of hard because there's three of them, and it's like asking me to choose between my children. I'm going to go with the Pearl Bryan Bobby Mackey story because that one is really, really close to my heart.
Right.
You know, I started into true crime when I was 8 years old when I learned about Lizzie Borden, right?
Yeah.
And was fascinated with murders ever since. Well, Lizzie Borden happened in 1892, and Pearl Bryan's murder happened in 1896. And her story was actually bigger than Lizzie Borden.
Yeah.
I mean, it was newspapers, you know, not just in the U.S., but overseas as well. Because, you know, they had a dead body with no head, and they didn't know who she was.
Right.
And it took them 6 days to identify her. And, you know, so I researched that one when I was a child. And I knew the story backwards and forwards.
Right, so you started out on this early.
The first time I see, you know, paranormal investigators on TV going to this place and they're talking about her, how her head was thrown down, you know, this well to hell because there were satanic rituals going on there. And I'm sitting there going, whoa, back up the truck. That's not right. And, you know, you've got this poor girl who was pregnant. You know, she was 5 months pregnant when she was murdered. And, you know, when they did the autopsy on this poor woman, when they took her baby out, they put it in a peppermint stick jar from the drugstore and
right.
charged people to come and see it.
Right. Yeah, I remember.
And that broke my heart.
I remember, you know, from the Geeks and Ghosts appearance that you did, which we'll go back into that here later, but you did talk about that. And that was one thing that kind of struck a nerve with me, too. I mean, because if anybody's got a reason to have some unfinished business or unsettled kind of spirit, I mean, you're buried without a head, but you're buried. To me, I'm a father of three. I mean, and Anthony is too. I mean, that's not something that I don't think
well,
even
not
I can
your
rest.
Head, but not your baby.
Right,
they lost
right.
It.
That's what I'm saying. Is like your baby's not there with you, so you are not complete. I guess in a sense is the way I would put it. Because I mean, you know, there's nothing like a mother's love for sure.
Well, and to play devil's advocate on this particular one, you know, because I'm all about the truth,
right.
There will be people on the other side that will say, you know, she did do things to try to instigate a miscarriage because
yeah.
she thought that was the only way she could hold on to this guy.
Right.
So there will be people that say she didn't care about the baby because she went to Cincinnati to have an illegal operation to get rid of it. But to me, the bottom, you know, as a female, I know that deep down in her heart, she thought if she just kind of went along, maybe she could change his mind and he'd end up marrying her and they'd have the baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I don't know. It's just, you know, when you go through that part and then, you know, when you look at the actual history and, you know, you've read it, you know, Bobby Mackey's didn't exist. That was a working distillery at the time.
Right,
there's no way they took her head and threw it down the water pump where they pumped in water from the river to distill anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was basically, you know, like a tunnel in a sense. I mean,
well, when they built the distillery, when Roberson built it in 1876, he had came to an agreement with the railroad company to build three tunnels from the distillery underneath the railroad to the Licking River. And part of the reason that the railroad let them do that was to keep the railroad from flooding if they pumped the water in.
Yeah.
So that's what they did. They pumped the water in and used it. You know, it was the distillery building. And those three wells are still there. I mean, not wells, but tunnels.
Right.
You know, it's not a well to hell. It wasn't anything. You know, it was never a slaughterhouse.
I got you.
And some guy wrote a book in 2001, back when that Carl guy was telling everybody he was being possessed by something that was at Bobby Mackey's.
Yeah.
That's kind of where these things started coming out, because if you look at interviews, you know, before that with people who remember the story, satanic cults were never mentioned.
Right.
Slaughterhouses were never mentioned. None of that stuff. This was all made up for a book that was written in 2001.
Right, which, I mean, that's like a point that me and Anthony were talking about right before the podcast earlier, is like shows like Ghost Adventures. I'm not trying to knock them in any way, but most of the stuff they build up a big hype for because of ratings alone. I mean,
well, it's entertainment. It's para entertainment.
Exactly.
And, you know, I'll be the first to admit, I watch every paranormal show there is.
Yeah.
Well, except one, because it's too boring, I can't get through it. But for the most part, I watch 99% of the shows. You know, I like to see the new gadgets. I like to, you know, I will admit, I have gotten an idea or two, you know, from watching the shows. But I also know that you can't watch these shows and just go out to the Ghost Hunter store and pick up equipment and go to a house and investigate. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, that's what's happened with the TV generation. And that's why I teach a class now that's called How Not to Be a Ghost Hunter.
Exactly. Yeah, that's another point we're going to bring up here in a little bit in the interview. When you come out public with your findings, because, I mean, you do the homework, do you get, like, hate mail or just people disagreeing with you and trying to...
You know, it's funny. I haven't gotten one piece of hate mail, but you got to keep in mind, I'm not on TV doing this.
Right.
I'm publishing on a website now. You know, eventually it'll be a book.
Yeah,
but that's down the road.
What about your feedback?
Those people don't really know yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as your feedback goes for people, when you do debunk these and you have the proof, because I know looking at your websites and stuff, it's, you have the proof. I mean, you have a copy of, you know, this record or this record.
Yeah, newspaper articles or
right.
birth certificates or death certificates or maps of the town that show, like with Bobby Mackey's, I've got that map that shows where the distillery was and where the slaughterhouse actually was.
Right. So
yeah.
When you're doing that, do you get, like, say the owner of, you know, Bobby Mackey's, do they hit you up and say, oh, well, you know, that's not right or anything like that?
No, to date, I have not heard from anybody. I kind of expected to hear from Waverly when I published that one.
Yeah.
But I haven't yet. But what's going to be interesting is, you know, you look on the website, I've done the Exorcist House and I've done Waverly. And both those locations have had documentaries made by the Booth Brothers, right?
Right.
You had The Exorcist Boy and Spooked, which was each location respectively. And I'm actually going to be at Scarefest with him this weekend. So yeah. I'm waiting to see if anything happens while we're up there together, because, you know, I'm going to be talking about this stuff in my talks. So, yeah, well, nothing's happened yet, but ask me again after this weekend.
Yeah, looking at your website, you seem to be staying pretty busy with what you're doing.
We do, and it's running me ragged. I had to promise my husband that I would take November off,
right,
and not do anything,
right,
because we've been running since June. And, of course, you know, October is always a busy month for us because, you know, everybody wants the ghost person. But I'm excited for Scarefest because it's so different from DragonCon. You know, DragonCon is, you know, we go down on Wednesday, stay till Monday. It's 24/7 the whole time we're down there. You know, they say it's 70,000 people. I'm going to tell you it's 100,000 people. And Scarefest is like, what, 20,000 people? And it shuts down at night because it's in a convention center. So it's going to be interesting to see the other side of it because I've never done another convention.
And Scarefest,
yeah, DragonCon's the only one I've done.
Scarefest is going to be in Lexington, Kentucky, right?
Correct. Yeah, they actually got wind of my How Not to Be a Ghost Hunter class, and I wrote a book for it, like a Spiral Brown 60-page book for the students to, or participants to follow along with.
Yeah.
And they asked to look at it, and when they did, they're like, well, would you mind giving another talk from what I was already scheduled to talk? So they asked me to condense a four-hour class into a 45-minute talk. So I'll actually be presenting the How Not to Be a Ghost Hunter with all the ghost hunters up there, which is going to be interesting. You asked me about the feedback. All the feedback I've gotten so far has been really good, and everybody is like, wow, I didn't know that. I can't believe how much you dug into this to find the real stuff. So I haven't gotten any negative yet.
Well, that's good. When people get familiar with your work and what you have going on, do you get a lot of requests? And the reason I'm asking is kind of a loaded question, because I think Three-Legged Lady Road needs a serious background investigation done. Because I don't know if you've heard of Three-Legged Lady Road.
No, you're going to have to educate me on that one.
Okay. We live in, I say Tupelo.
Northeast Mississippi.
Northeast Mississippi, yeah. And Columbus is like a 35-minute drive from here. And it's actually called, what is it, Anthony? Nash Road?
Nash Road.
It's called Nash Road, but nobody around here calls it Nash Road. They call it Three-Legged Lady Road. And the story, if you ask a different person, you get a different story. And
right.
As to the origin.
Urban legends.
Right. Why she's a three-legged lady, or where she came from, or the only consistency you get is that you drive down this road and she runs alongside your car. And there's been reports and pictures taken of people with knuckle prints in their car, like are punching your car as you drive through there. And which is an awesome story, but you can't get a clear answer as to where she came from, what happened, other than a lot of people say, well, she got ran over by a bunch of kids while she was walking down the road. A bunch of teenagers ran her over and she got killed. And there used to be, a lot of people would say, if you knock on the door of the church and you jump in the car and drive, she'll chase you. But the church burned down. So there's so much, the water's gotten really muddy over the years at the backstory. And the idea of it's really cool, and everybody around here knows about it. But I think we need your skills in on this little investigation here.
I don't know. Those are really hard because, you know, every town's got one of those. We've got them here.
Oh, yeah. Just like every town's got a big foot.
And everything, you've either got a tunnel or, you know, crying baby bridge or the white lady. I've never heard of a three-legged woman. That one's new.
Right.
But, it's hard to figure out where those started. It's kind of like Jersey Devil.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, this is a big one. And, you know, this is one I actually talked about at DragonCon. You know, that thing goes back, way back. And, you know, there is some, I don't want to say there's some truth in it as far as the monster itself, but, you know, I've been able to trace back the original story from where it showed up. But if you look at it now, every person who tells it to you, you know, it's the woman who had this thing, you know, it was either her first child or her 13th child or her 7th child, or, you know, the story's never consistent, right, on how the monster showed up. So it's really hard to kind of, you can kind of try to trace back to see when it started. And then, you know, it's like a game of telephone, you know, that we played when we were kids.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you tell one person and they tell two people and nobody gets any of the facts right.
Yeah. Which, you know, it goes back to
it could have been some poor lady who escaped from the circus and was deformed and, you know, something happened to her and people just ran with a story.
Right, which goes back to, you know, talking about a while ago, the embellishments behind everything. Stories get told over time and they change every time somebody new tells it. So, you know, I understand all that, exactly where you're coming from on that, so... But
I think I'm the only one that done Three-Legged Lady Road as a teenager. I grew up, like, you know, 15 minutes away from there and from where we're at now. And I'm the oldest one in this group. I'm 43, and I think when I was, like, 15 or 16, we was completely sober driving down the road waiting on a lady to chase us. So the story's been around for a while, but it's just one of those urban legends in every town, like he was talking about.
Well, you know, here we've got a witch on a, you know, a road where somebody was supposedly murdered a long time ago. And, you know, if you're supposedly, if you drive down this road at a certain time of night on a, you know, certain phase of the moon, the witch is supposed to show up. So, well, it never worked for me when I was a teenager. I never saw her.
Speaking of the little witches and the little three-legged ladies, do you like the smaller investigations that people bring up, or do you like the bigger ones like Bobby Mackey's? What do you like as far as like to do? I mean, I know you like the history and the behind the stories, but which one do you like to do? Which one's more passionate for you to do?
My passion is with helping my clients.
Okay.
You know, the history stuff is fun. It's, you know, I'm passionate about history too. But, you know, I want to help that scared person. You know, a lot of people are getting these days where they don't do residential cases anymore because it's gotten so tainted. But I'm one that's still out there, you know, plugging away. You know, if people need help, you know, I will go within a 4-hour driving radius of Atlanta to come help you on my dime. So, you know, it's the people that I want to help because, you know, I say that, but I need to kind of back up. You know, I am a skeptic. You know, when I come into your house, I'm going to do, you know, like you said, I'm going to do everything possible to try to prove that house is not inhabited by somebody who hasn't passed on yet.
Right.
But if I do find, you know, that there is something there, my first priority is to get that spirit where it needs to go. Right?
Yeah.
And by helping the spirit, the client wins by default.
Right. That makes all the sense in the world to me.
All right, we're going to have to stop right there. We're going to pick up next week with part two of the interview with Shannon Byers. So make sure you tune in.
Those new band shirts look awesome. Where did you get those done?
At Anarchy Design.
They do screen printing now?
Oh, yeah. They do professional custom screen printing at a very competitive rate.
Well, where can I find them?
Look them up on Facebook, facebook.com/anarchydesign69, or email them at anarchydesign69@gmail.com. You can check out some of their work on their Facebook page. When you're ready to order, you can send them your idea, or they can design it for you. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com. All right, that's episode 55. It's done.
Good.
Let's ride off. Let's get on our horses. Giddy up.
Yeehaw.
Surprisingly good impersonation of a horse.
No good impersonation would be like... That made it weird. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You never farted.
I thought that was a good show.
It was a good show.
I always say that, but I really mean it. I think that was a good show. We had a lot. We covered a lot. Like, this is a big, this is a meat-filled show. It's a big show of, like, warm sink meat.
It really is.
Son of Zorn. That's where that's from. This show was packed full of goodness, vitamins, minerals. I mean, this was just a
and munchy
good,
food.
It was a hearty show. There was not a lot of filler, but a shitload of killer.
Right.
Let's do a quick recap on how to win the book. Do you guys want? I mean, people like free stuff, and this isn't just some random free stuff. This is like a really good book. Like,
it is a really good book.
You should buy this book in case you don't win it.
And
then if you win it, that's just an added bonus.
As of this point at the end of the podcast, I'm like 70 and a half. Like, I got past the 69 mark.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Because I've been sitting here watching you the whole time and you haven't read shit.
I read it.
Okay, I'm glad you like lying to these people as much as I do.
I read it in my head because I'm psychotic that way. Wait, psychic. Wait, what's the word I'm looking for?
No, psychotic covered it pretty well.
Yeah, it was good.
Let's be important.
I don't know how.
I don't think important is the word I was trying to go for.
Impotent?
No, I don't think that would help either. I mean, it wouldn't hurt.
It wouldn't hurt me. Let's be for real seriousness.
Make sure you plan on going to That's So Sick Fest. Make sure you tune in next week on episode 56 when we have part two of the Shannon Byers interview. And we get into even more stuff that she's got going on and stuff she's done. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah, check it out.
All right, we got to go.
We're going to bid you adieu.
We seriously
right
got to go.
We're going to bid you adieu right now.
Adieu?
Do.
Bid you like that.
Do,
that sounds,
I do, a female do.
That just sounds like half of doo-doo. Well, I'm going to bid you a doo-doo.
All right, fine, we're going to bid you a doo-doo.
I'm going to bid you a poop. That's not nice. That doesn't sound savory.
Says the guy who just made us watch like X-Lights videos on YouTube.
I mean, it would be more
purple.
It would be more purple if you said, like, I'm going to miss you in your own kind of way.
I'm going to miss you in your own kind of way.
I quit. This is the last podcast I'm ever going to do.
Ever. We quit. Bye-bye now.
Get my purse. We're leaving.
Mark.
Stop doing the podcast drunk. Love you, bye.
Love you, minute.